Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the show. My special guest today is George Jacobson, the Chief Information Officer for the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. Now, George, this is a return visit for you on the show, so welcome back.
Thank you very much, Jason. Always a pleasure to be here, long-time listener.
But it's been more than 2 years since you're on my show. I want to start by getting a status update on some of those priorities back from 2012. So let's start with the first one. At the time, you mentioned an IT infrastructure upgrade was your top priority, things like telework, which I know you guys are big supporters of. Just talk about the IT infrastructure. How has it continued to improve over the last few years?
In a number of ways. First of all, when we go back to that time frame, we were considering actual changes to the infrastructure itself in terms of the hardware, operating system changes, and physical relocation. I'm pleased to say that we have completed that work in both of our primary data center locations. We completed the physical upgrade of the equipment in one of the facilities at the end of 2012. We then relocated that equipment at the very end. The government shutdown slowed us down a little bit, and then into the very beginning of 2014. So the end of 2013-14, then we actually picked up that entire infrastructure, relocated it to an enterprise-class facility. Subsequent to that, we upgraded the hardware infrastructure in the other location, and I'm pleased to say now that all of that work has been completed as well. Obvious benefits of moving into an enterprise-class facility are the 24-hour service that is available to you, the dual power capabilities, the redundancy that exists with regard to on-site generation capabilities, redundancy with regard to your telecommunications, and so on. So we're very pleased to be in that facility. It has worked out for us quite well, and it also meets some of the other directives from the Treasury Department in terms of consolidating our footprint and the movement to green, the conservation of resources, the carbon footprint, and all these initiatives.
So is this a government-owned, government-operated? Is this a contractor-owned, contractor-operated? What's the setup for the enterprise data center?
It is go-go, government-owned, government-operated. We are not in a position, we believe, from a law enforcement perspective, well-positioned to place the sensitive information we have into a non-government facility. At some point down the road, that might be a topic of conversation. Lots of issues that would have to be addressed before we get there. Everyone's familiar with the issues associated with FedRAMP. We know that DOD is looking at FedRAMP as a baseline and then adding requirements above and beyond that in order to meet their specific requirements. I think as a community, the IG community might, and I say might, have an interest in that sort of a facility that would serve us from a law enforcement perspective. But at the moment, there's no appetite for that. We seem to be more concerned with consolidating our footprints within the departments. Perhaps at some point down the road, we might be looking at the larger solution writ large.
So I know you called it an enterprise data center. So I guess two questions come from that. The first is it's a go-go, government-owned, government-operated. Is it just a TIGDA-only facility, or are you more of a shared service, if you will, with other A, Treasury components, or B, other law enforcement components, other IGs maybe?
No, this is primarily a Treasury facility, so there are other Treasury organizations co-located with us in that particular location, yes.
And then the other follow-up to that is this considered a private cloud in some ways? Or I know we're going to talk cloud in a little bit, but is this the beginnings of one?
We operate our own cloud. I think we talked about our virtualization efforts and our support vendors, meaning our hardware vendors, some of our software vendors, are very impressed with our penetration as it relates to our virtualized environment. So we provide, with a few exceptions, a virtualized environment for our users. So that is that private cloud that you're referencing. We use that internally to provision all of our applications, except for those few things that I mentioned that, you know, manufacturers, vendors would tell you, you can virtualize this, but it's not really recommended. We'd prefer to have it on a separate stack. But nonetheless, we push as hard as we can. We're 70% virtualized. across our enterprise. If you throw in our labs, it's probably considerably higher than that, but we're talking about the operational environment.
Last time we spoke 2 years ago, that was at the beginning stages. You were looking at the private cloud, you were looking at server virtualization. So now that you're about 70% there, is that the limit, or do you think you can get to 80, 90, even 99%?
Well, I think you're correct. At the time we talked about it last, I think we were just over 50%, so we have made further progress in that regard. You always want to try and do a little bit better because you're conserving your footprint. Your costs are typically lower as a result of that. It's impossible to say whether or not we are at the practical limits of that. We'll continue to look at the possibilities. Don't know is the short answer.
From a private cloud perspective, is the private cloud providing you guys with what you'd hope for? Again, 2 years ago, it was just the beginning stages of it. And even now, 2 years ago, cloud was not as ubiquitous, not as commonly talked about as I think when I talk to CIOs like yourself around government, everybody's in cloud. Everybody's using some sort of cloud computing service, whether it's just for email or collaboration or something for business and mission apps. From your perspective of private cloud, how are you guys using it?
We haven't used any of the private cloud capabilities except for our public-facing websites. So we do use those services. We do that through the department. The vendor there, I believe, is Amazon. So we're out there with a number of other government entities utilizing that capability. But for our own applications, the internal-facing things, we use our own private virtualized cloud that is not shared with any of the other organizations. Departmentally, there is several initiatives underway to examine what are the common services that could be provided across the department in an effort to try and drive some of the costs down. But apropos of the comment I made earlier, from a law enforcement perspective, evidentiary issues, interviews, records that would otherwise might be inappropriate to share, we're taking a very slow approach to examining that. Thinking about where this might fit from a law enforcement community standpoint, that casts things in a different light. But it becomes a question of, do we build it and they will come, or do we look for somebody that's able to offer that kind of a capability? And we have just had too many day-to-day operational issues to even engage in that kind of a conversation.
Has there been any discussions in the IG community more broadly? And I know you can't speak for the entire IG community, but when you talk to other CIOs or other people who run the technology for IG offices, has that come up saying, well, maybe we could have a private cloud just for IGs or just for law enforcement? Or have you had conversations with the Justice Department or Homeland Security regarding this issue? Or is that, again, based on what you said, you're not quite ready for that conversation?
Let me back up for just a second. You know, through the SIGI, there is an IT working group where we meet regularly within the IT community to discuss items of common interest. There might be more than you would think just on the surface that are common to all the IGs, but then there are some things that are not so common. Part of the challenge that we have is this is all data-driven. Certain of the organizations represented are organizations whose data is not terribly sensitive. There is a tremendous drive to make that data available to the community. So as an example, if you work for the Bureau of the Census, you want to make that information available to everyone. On the other hand, look at our situation dealing with the IRS, sensitive financial data. I'm not so sure that that would necessarily be wise unless we knew exactly where all the piece parts were, where all the data was all the time, and we could be assured that we had control of that. So, again, and you can take that for every one of the departments, every one of the agencies, and go down the line and say, well, probably okay, well, maybe not so much. We're talking about the Department of Defense and the intel community, the law enforcement community, which, of course, the IG is part of that. But when you look at some of those responsibilities, some of those activities, you might want to think about that long and hard before you make that leap. And so in answer to your question about have we had that conversation, it's been at very high levels. It's been preliminary. No one is ready to move in that direction with any kind of alacrity. We recognize we have responsibilities to our host organizations, in our case, the Department of the Treasury, in other instances, their host organizations. But at the same time, we have the other responsibilities that is paramount to our mission that has to take precedence.
All right. Now, we've talked cloud. We talked virtualization a little bit. We talked about IT infrastructure. All this goes back to a bigger conversation around telework. We're going to do that after we come come back from break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is George Jacobson, the Chief Information Officer for the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio 1500.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is George Jacobson, Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. Now, George, before break, we spent a lot of time looking at some older priorities, IT infrastructure, private cloud, virtualization. All of that in some ways leads to telework. It leads to working from anywhere at any time, accessing your data through multiple devices, whether it's laptops or tablets or what have you. Last time we spoke 2 years ago, you were just into that effort of moving employees to laptops. Did that happen? Are you now onto tablet computers? And how does that affect the work from anywhere, the telework concept?
The short answer to the question is, yes, we did migrate from our old laptop platforms to the newer laptop platforms. We're running Windows 7, which is significant from a security standpoint. As you well know, that sort of Damocles has been hanging over everyone's head as Microsoft retires that platform. So we're very pleased with that. Those have been in place now just about 2 years. I think when we spoke, we were in the throes of the procurement, the acquisition cycle, and then shortly thereafter, we started rolling those out across the enterprise. We did that quite successfully. We got all of our units replaced in under 60 days, which is a pretty impressive feat. Those have been in place now for since that time, and the productivity has been manifested by the fact that these are now newer machines, faster application of Moore's Law in terms of the processing speeds, the storage capacity, the rapidity with which you can perform your tasks. In terms of the rest of the enterprise as it relates to the XP platforms, we are finishing up our retirement of a few XP stations that we have as kiosks throughout the enterprise. I think we have I don't remember the exact number. We'll just put it at approximately 70 locations where we have these kiosks in place. We're replacing those with Windows 7 platforms. And I'm pleased to say they have performed well. Believe it or not, we are going to, less than a year from now, we will start looking at the replacement for the next cycle. We put these in place on a 4-year cycle basis. Being 2 years in and looking at approximately 18 months out to start the planning cycle for the next, we will have to engage because you just can't do these changeouts overnight. It's unclear at this point whether or not we will move to another laptop environment, whether we'll go to a BYOD because of a virtualized experience, or we will go to some tablets. I believe there's a future for tablets across the enterprise, certainly for certain specific locations, specific functions, specific roles and responsibilities, where that tablet might be a better choice for some people than a full-blown laptop. Of course, the technology keeps moving. Laptops become more and more capable. But the axiom is still pretty much, if you are a consumer of information, a laptop may very well suits your needs. If you're involved in, and we see it in retail all the time, if you're involved in certain inspection aspects of your the enterprise, that might work as well where you're doing lots of checklist sorts of things. But if you're going to be doing a fair amount of content creation, content editing, you may find that that environment is not the environment for you, that you really need more of the capabilities. Now, do we think that 18 months from now, the situation, the landscape might look differently than it does now? Of course. That's just the reality of the IT world that we live in. Think about where we were 2 years ago compared to where we are today, whether you're talking about phones, tablets, laptops, desktops. You read every day that the end of the desktop is near, the end of the laptop is near. Well, we've been hearing that for a while, but they're still around. So, again, situational requirements, roles and responsibilities drive those requirements. We believe there's a place for some of these things. And what you do see, more than anything else, back to the comment I made earlier about it's data-driven. What does your data look like? How are you accessing that data? And there's a tremendous convergence. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see this. There's a tremendous convergence in the mobility environment on the platforms to try and provide that expression that you use, data anywhere, anytime, on any device.
I want to go back to something you said about the move away from XP, because I know several CIOs are going through that. When you started to update your laptops, you also had to update your back-end systems, or at least that mission application systems that maybe worked well with XP, but now, okay, do they work well with Windows 7? How have you gone through that process to ensure that there is that movement from one operating system to the next?
There's a challenge associated with that, as you well know, and as you articulated, there is the situation where you don't own an application, but because it is closely tied to a particular operating system, in this case maybe not XP, but perhaps some earlier server operating system, or in some instances we have issues with Java, we have issues with other languages that are produced, and as a consumer of those, you have the challenge of trying to meet your security requirements based upon using the latest and greatest and fully patched. Well, if that software is no longer patched or supported and you're reliant on that application, what does that mean? That means that you are now subject to whatever the providing organization is going to do. Now, they have the same requirements that we do. They face that, but they may not have the budget to go and upgrade that. They may not have the ability to rebuild that application in the new environment. So what do? Well, you try to mitigate the risk as much as you can. You try to isolate the number of exposure points that you might have. You try to reduce the number of access points that you might have. So you can do that through a variety of technologies, including things like terminal servers and some other. You leverage the technology to reduce the footprint, but the risk is still there. You can further reduce the risk by placing some restrictions on the device itself. It can only be used for this particular application. And then you have the rules of behavior, which, of course, is always the weakest aspect of any of these things, the human element. And that's not to say these aren't good people and well-intentioned, but we're human. We all make mistakes. We do things sometimes without thinking.
Let me jump in real quick. Which of these approaches that you just described have you guys taken and implemented? Because I know, just again, talking from other CIOs, this is a common problem across government of, okay, how do we make that move and how do we make sure that these legacy systems will work with Win 7?
We had to employ all of them. We had to go back to the providers of some of these services and say, look, we have this challenge. First of all, are you aware of it? Because they may not have made the move or even begun the move themselves, so they may not be aware of it. That typically isn't the case. They typically are aware that they have a challenge, but they may not be aware of how that gets manifested and multiplied across multiple organizations. In some instances, the conversation has been quite positive. Yep, we have it. In fact, we are in testing ourselves. We'll let you know as soon as we're ready to roll that out. In other instances, it hasn't been as positive an interaction, where the organization that is hosting the application has said, we don't have the money, we don't have the people, we don't have the time. I don't know when we're going to get to it. And so that poses a risk by one is a risk to all.
And what have you done in those situations? Have you decided to move off of that application that's not supported by Win 7, or are you cordoning it off so it can be used only on this type of machine at this time of day, as long as that machine's not connected to the outside world per se?
Yeah, we've had to apply all of those mitigations that I talked about earlier, and it's going to be application and situation specific. The challenge has been identifying those things as they come up. I want to be clear that it's not just driven by Windows 7 transition from XP or Windows 8 for some of the organizations that just said, I'm going to Windows 8 and we're going to skip the 7. transition. I don't know what they're doing in those instances, but I know what we're doing in terms of trying to mitigate these exposures. And some of these things, you're right. You might want to look at it and just say, well, do I need that application any longer? But if it's a mission critical application for you, you have little choice. And so you accept the risk, you apply the mitigations as best you can, whatever that residual risk is, that's what you're accepting, and you keep the relentless but delicate pressure to correct the circumstances so that we don't have any type of incident that would be deleterious.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some of your new priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is George Jacobson, the Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez. How do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is George Jacobson, the Chief Information Officer at the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. George, before break, we're talking a lot about older priorities. We're talking a lot about cloud and virtualization, and we got into kind of the move from XP to Win 7. Let's talk about some of your new priorities as part of that. Tell us about the VPN pilot and what did that lead to, and what's it leading to, I guess, now as well, that's among your new priorities.
Sure. Well, as we were rolling out the new laptop units 2 years ago, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we did was expand the possibilities for the user experience. By that we mean, what else could we offer the user other than a fixed connection, a hard connection? And so, as coincident with that rollout, we had a pilot in place that enabled wireless connectivity for those laptops. And I'm pleased to say that we, shortly after the final deployment dust settled, we completed our testing of that experience from a wireless perspective. And today, our users can connect in a variety of ways. They can connect through a hard connection, as they always could. They could connect through a cellular air card, for example, that we provide on a spurious basis. As you know, I'm going to a conference, can I get an air card to go with me? I'm not sure what connectivity is going to be there, although in today's environment, just about any place you go, they set up a Wi-Fi hotspot for you. And then the third option, of course, was the Wi-Fi option. And while we have approved this from an enterprise perspective, it is still managed on the part of the individual users. So while we have authorized it from an enterprise perspective, not all users are authorized to use it. They have to have manager approval. They have to demonstrate to us that they have gone through the necessary training and that they understand that the rules of behavior are a little different than they have been in the past as it relates to a fixed connection. And once we have that certificate, then we can enable that device for them. So we're very pleased with that. It has turned out to be a tremendous efficiency boost for our workforce. It has improved the user experience from the standpoint of getting closer and closer to that anytime, anywhere type of environment. So we're very pleased with that. It's gone very well for us. Our testing was superior. We just went through our certification authorization for FSMA, and that was tested yet again. And once again, our tester said, can't get in. So we're very, very pleased with that circumstance, and our users are as well.
That's part of kind of the mobility piece, the telework piece that we want to touch upon as well. How does this all fit into your next set of priorities? What are you working on over the next, 6 or 9 months?
One of the challenges that most of the federal agencies have is, what are we doing about our mobile devices? What are we doing about the platform, whether that's a RIM device, a BlackBerry device, whether it's an Apple device, a Windows device, a Droid? What are you doing about that? How are you managing that? We have been a BlackBerry shop since I've been here. We will probably continue to be a BlackBerry shop from an infrastructure standpoint because the new technology does allow us to manage other devices. It is unclear as to what those devices might be, the devices that are in the user's hands, and we're in the process of evaluating that now and relying on our partners in the industry to share their experiences with us, our partners in the federal government, as to what their experience has been and what the transition schedule has looked like. That's a very high priority for us. We already talked about XP. That's an extremely high priority for us because of the security implications. So those are number one with a bullet and number two on my list. Another initiative that we have that is tremendously important to us is rationalization of our print and multifunction device environment. We have quite a few printers spread across the organization. We have quite a few copiers. And how do we move into a more modern environment where we can leverage the multifunction capability of the copier device, the thing that has been traditionally called a copier, which, of course, today has the ability to not just copy, but it can scan, it can print, it can even act as a fax machine for you. And how do we leverage all of that and reduce our inventory, again, back to being green, reducing our footprint, reducing our power draw, but at the same time, being more efficient in terms of our user experience. And so you have, on the one hand, the convenience of having something on your desk as opposed to one of these larger machines that might be able to function a little bit faster. So is it more efficient for me to provision a scanner and a printer for a user where that scan might be 4 pages a minute? I'm making that up, but let's just use that as an example. Or being able to provision a device that can scan 50 pages, you know, at copy speeds, can scan 50 pages a minute. Well, maybe it makes more sense to take a minute and walk over and scan that 50-page document than using this 4-page-a-minute device over here. That requires some cultural change. It requires some education. It requires some buy-in on the part of the business. We're having those conversations now. We've done the data collection to try and figure out, well, just exactly how many pages, copies, scans did we do in the last year, and where do we rationalize that? What's that sweet spot for us? So, again, looking at our friends in the rest of government, listening to what's happened in the private sector, talking to the vendors, finding out what they're seeing and hearing from their customers, and hopefully ending up in a very good place for the organization. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have many devices for a single experience. In other instances, given the mission of these individuals, sometimes it does make sense to have some level of redundancy built into your capabilities.
All right, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was George Jacobson, the Chief Information Officer for the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. George, sounds like we could have talked a lot longer, so we will have you back on the show sooner than the 2 years. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Always a pleasure, Jason. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.